This is a production of Cornell University.
So it is 4:32 p.m. on April 20th, 2021, and I'm officially calling the University Assembly meeting to order. So I'm going to ask Casey to quickly roll call us before we begin.
Awesome. Valerie Amer?
She's excused.
Uchi Chukwukere? Hehe Depew?
Present.
David Dunham?
Present.
Nicola Danis?
Present.
Jacob Veit?
Present.
Brandon Fortenberry?
Present.
Thomas Fox?
Present.
David Heiner?
Present.
Alex Hong? Robert Howard?
Present.
Oh, quickly, Casey. Alex is also excused.
Catherine Huang? Logan Kenny?
Present.
Caroline Levine?
Here.
Jeff P?
Here.
Bennett Scher. Lucas Smith.
Here.
Charles Winlone.
Here.
Polar Thompson.
Here.
Jessica Withers.
Here.
All right, great. So before we start, I just wanted to quickly acknowledge that we had a loss on our campus of Sean West, who was graduating in the year of 2024. And I wanted to start our meeting with a moment of silence, just out of respect for him, his family, loved ones, and our entire campus. So if you could all join me in a moment of silence. Okay, thank you everyone for being here. I'm going to quickly call for any late additions to the agenda. I'm sorry that it was sent out so close to the meeting, and I hope you all were able to look at it. Okay, seeing none, I'm going to read our land acknowledgement and then get us started. So Cornell University is located on the traditional homelands of the Gayagono, the Cayuga Nation. The Gayagono are members of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy, an alliance of six sovereign nations with a historic and contemporary presence on this land. The Confederacy precedes the establishment of Cornell University, New York State, and the United States of America. We acknowledge the painful history of Gayagono disposition and honor the ongoing connection of Gayagono people, past and present, to these lands and waters. So starting us off today is approval of the 4-6 21 meeting minutes. There were two small corrections that Casey recently changed, which is Bob was changed to R. Howarth in one section, and just a spelling grammatical issue, so nothing crazy. So I also understand that this came to everyone really late, so I open the floor for a motion to either approve or table.
I'll motion to approve the minutes.
Is there a second?
Second.
All right, great. Is there any discussion on approval of the minutes? Seeing none, if it's all right, I'm going to do a vote by unanimous consent. So is there any opposition to approving the minutes? All right, seeing none, the minutes have been approved. I know that we have two different agendas out right now that show Resolution 22 as Item B and also the discussion with President Pollack and Vice President Melina. So since I believe they're coming at 5, I think that we can get started with the resolution. So, Brandon, if it's okay, I'm going to give you the floor for Resolution 22.
Thank you very much, Logan. Would you like me to share my screen with that, or?
Yeah, that'd be perfect.
Okay. Sorry, I thought I had it loaded on here, but I don't seem to. Let me get that. So the resolution that I'm presenting here is to look at filling the vacancies in the University Hearing Review Board to ensure that we are able to have continuity of services for the UHRB through this semester and into the next semester, allowing for to give some kind of understanding of the area of concern is that we have a new code of conduct and a current code of conduct, and ensuring that what we have under the current code of conduct, all cases and hearings are able to be heard by a cohort of UHRB members. And then a new student code of conduct that will be going into effect in the fall will be heard by a second cohort of folks. So we put together with the CJC a recommended approach to that. I think Gina or whomever needs to give me ability to share screen that we can therefore keep the UHRB full and fill the vacancies and then fill the future vacancies. There we go, to handle the new student code of conduct items. So I'm going to go through. I hope folks had a chance to take a look at the resolution. Oh, there you go. Thank you. So we have the codes and the CJC received and reviewed applicants for the University Hearing Board. They were appointed for a two-year term beginning June 1 of 2020 and lasting until their graduation through May of 2022, whichever is sooner. Listed below are the names of those folks there. Whereas due to the COVID-19 pandemic, the appointment of the students was completed in accordance with the clause allowing for emergency appointments until May 31 of 2021. And be it therefore resolved, the above listed members are appointed to the UHRB for a full two-year term lasting until their graduation from the university or May 31st, 2022, whichever is sooner. So in essence, this is taking the group that is currently in the UHRB that is set to end their appointment on May 31st of this year and pushing that forward to what would be a full two-year term. In addition, below now speaks to how we would handle the transition from the current to the new student code of conduct. Whereas the CJC is tasked with receiving and reviewing applications for service on the UHRB for a two-year term and lasting until their graduation. And I'm going to paraphrase as we go through, because I want to make sure we have time for questions. The campus code of conduct shall expire on or before the start of the fall semester. And then the new the student code of conduct will be set to go into place no later than the commencement of the fall 2021 semester. Whereas every person that's serving in the official capacity under the role of the procedures shall receive an annual training that the director of the, as you can see, the Office of Student Conduct and Community Standards or other appropriate university expert appropriate to their position. So in light of all of these sort of areas where we have to have this transition, we have here that be it therefore resolved that the UHR members whose appointments end on May 31st, 2022, which we've noted up above, we continue their appointment and shall only participate in UHRB matters pertaining to what is referred to as the campus code of conduct or what we currently have in place. And their appointment will continue until that date, May 2022, until all matters pertaining to the campus code of conduct have been resolved or they have graduated, whichever may be sooner. Be it further resolved again that the CJC would then initiate the application process for the UHRB appointees who would begin their term on June 1st of 2021, and that would last for 2 years, as is the standard appointment. We also resolved that the start date for these appointments should actually really coincide with the effective date of the student code of conduct. So while they may begin their term, the start date would be whenever the student code of conduct goes into effect. And those appointments would coincide with the effective date. And then the UA shall entertain the extension of those of appointments for those currently on the UHRB who may be, whose term may be ending, to extend beyond their appointment date, or entertain applications from those to start a second two-year term. And then just noting here that this resolution be shared with the acting JA, the Judicial Codes Counselor, and the acting Dean of Students, and the Vice President of Student Campus Life, and the Office of the University Council. So that is the resolution. So hope folks had a chance to read it, and I see Bob already has his hand up. So now, Logan, if you're... Would I just take questions?
Yeah, that's fine. Bob, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Logan. Thank you, Brandon. I'm generally supportive of the resolution. You've clearly put a lot of thought into the details of it. It makes a lot of sense. I do have a correction, perhaps a technical correction, but in among the whereases, you say that the emergency appointments were made because of COVID-19, and I don't think that's factually true, actually. I don't think COVID-19 had anything to do with the emergency actions that we took. Maybe I'm misunderstanding what you're saying, but.
Thank you, Bob. To clarify, the actions that I was looking at were the COVID-19 pandemic. So I understand that there was an emergency sort of appointment that happened at the beginning of their terms, but then sort of only until December, but then a lot kind of happened and there was no formal extension process there.
Yeah, you're correct that the officers of the University Assembly back, I believe, in July of last year made the emergency appointments, but it had nothing to do with COVID. It was simply that the committee had never brought forward recommendations during the term as required by the bylaws. And I don't think that was because of COVID. We pushed the committee hard to do otherwise, and they simply got tied up in all of the code issues and simply failed to do so. So I would take that language out.
Definitely not something I'm tied to. I think it was just acknowledging that there was the emergency appointments. Perhaps someone could entertain or put forth a motion to make an adjustment as to what you know, how we want to paraphrase sort of that circumstance.
I could try if you put it back up. I don't have it in front of me. So.
I've got it. Yeah, I can show my screen now.
Awesome.
There we go.
All right, it's a small detail, but I think it's good to get these things right.
And so perhaps, Bob, if you want to
I think if you
take
just
a look at that. And
I think in line 27, if you simply deleted due to the COVID-19 pandemic.
Okay.
Yep.
Bob, would you be willing to move for the?
Yes, I move that we delete those words. The rest is correct. We made emergency appointments. It's just not the reason.
Is there anyone willing to second that motion?
I second.
All right. There's a motion out by Bob, seconded by Pilar. Is there any discussion on removing this language? All right, seeing none, unless there's opposition, since this is just an amendment, I'm also going to go by unanimous consent. So please speak out if you're against this. All right, seeing none, we're changing line 27 to read, whereas the appointment of these students was completed in accordance with the clause allowing for emergency appointments only until May 31st, 2021, semicolon, end. So Brandon, I'm just going to quickly also, mention that, Liel Sterling is a superstar student who does a ton, and she's associated with the Office of the Student Advocate, which is very similar to the JCC position. And she was asked to step down and accepted that, when we made our emergency appointments. I got in contact with her and was only able to figure out that she's graduating this year, but I she has not confirmed that she's no longer advising the OSA. So I recommend that we remove her. And if she's no longer advising, that she could be added back. And we can motion that if she's no longer advising, that that could be through a vote via email rather than waiting until the next meeting. But I don't have confirmation and I don't feel comfortable putting that through if she might still be a conflict of interest. So if there's someone willing to, I know she's also, she's not currently on the OSA, but she's acting as an advisor to the OSA from when I spoke with her last, and she was no longer the OSA. So I'm going to recommend that all of the other individuals do go through, but until we have confirmation from Liel that she would be removed.
I see. So the perhaps there would be an opportunity to amend just to state here that these recommendations are pending. We have not actually directly spoken with all of these individuals, so it's going to be dependent upon their whether, again, that's where the, you know, they're lasting until their graduation is stated, as well as they would have to agree to extend their appointment.
I understand that. However, there were three members who were asked to step down based on their positions with the OSA office, whether it was direct or indirect. And the other two members are not on this list, but she is. So I just think that in the interest in being fair to the other two individuals who also may have had circumstances change, that anyone who was excluded based on their status on the OSA or advising the OSA is just removed and we could deal with it at a later date.
Yeah, I'd be open to that. I don't, like I said, I'm not familiar with the students that are listed there. They were just the ones that were provided as the current list of students.
Yeah, so as I can't make a motion, I'm going to recommend that Liel be removed from this list until we have confirmation. And I guess it's a tricky motion that we would be able to vote via email if she's no longer connected to the OSA to re-add her at a later date. Yeah, Gina.
Sorry, my microphone is a little sketchy, but I understand from the OJA that they're having a terrible time making quorum for some of these hearings. So if it's all the same, perhaps leave her on until you confirm, but note that she can't, you know, be selected for a hearing until such time so that as soon as that's confirmed, if she's eligible, she can go right into the pool.
Yeah, I'm fine with that also, Brandon. If you're willing to reach out to Liel right after this meeting and find out if she's still advising members in that office, and if she says yes, then I guess she would resign a second time. I'm open to that as well. I just want to make sure that we don't have conflict of interest issues.
Perhaps there might be an opportunity to just make an amendment to the lines that we're speaking to, acknowledging that there be no conflict of interest or other excluding factors here. I don't know if that might be something someone might want to recommend, make an amendment to make that sort of an adjustment, and that would sort of allow us to leave Liel on the list, but acknowledge that there's a qualifying piece that would need to be done.
I think that's an excellent idea if somebody is willing to figure out where to put in language excluding conflict of interest. Nick?
So why can't we just remove Liel and pass this resolution? So can I motion for line 16 to be removed from this resolution?
Can. Yes.
Yeah, so that's what I'm moving for.
Okay, so there's a motion on the floor to remove Liel, line 16 from this resolution. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Any discussion? All right, I'm just going to quickly add, if it does turn out that Liel in within the last like couple of months is no longer in her position, we can do an emergency appointment. So I'm fully supportive of removing just for safety, since I think it's fair to the other two students who were excluded. Is there any other comment before a vote? All right, seeing none, if everyone's all right, I'm also going to do unanimous consent. Is there any opposition? You can either unmute yourself or you can press the red button. Okay, seeing none, line 16 will be removed. And that has gone forward. Is there anything else that people would want to discuss on this resolution? All right, I'm going to entertain a motion.
I move to call the previous question.
Seconded.
All right. So is there any conversation before we vote? All right, seeing none, I am going to ask that these votes are not by unanimous consent. So sorry, I just muted myself on accident. So please cast your vote with the yes or the no button. Okay, I see 12 yeses, no nos. Charlie, it looks like you might have pressed after, so it might be 13. Casey, by any chance, did you catch that?
I did not. It's probably 13, though.
I think that I saw Charlie's hand go up after. So, okay, is there any abstention besides me? Okay, two abstentions. So it's going to pass 13-0-2-2. All right. Fantastic. Thank you very much, Brandon, and the CJC for getting your appointments so in such a timely manner. And I know it's been a lot of work with the transition, and it's very much appreciated.
Thank you, Logan. Thank you, everyone. I appreciate it.
Okay, so the next item on the agenda is our discussion with President Pollack and Vice President Molina. We have about 5 minutes, so I'm open to taking a quick 5-minute recess and people grabbing water or like standing outside and getting like really quick fresh air, or moving forward, whichever people would prefer. All right, I'm just going to make the executive decision that we are going to take actually, I think we have to motion for it. Would somebody move to take a 5-minute recess or a 4-minute recess at this point?
Yeah, I'll make that motion. Move for 5-minute recess.
It's a 4-minute one now.
4 minutes.
Is there a second?
Second.
All right, vote by unanimous consent. Anyone opposed? All right, seeing none, we are on recess until 5 p.m. Welcome back, everyone. I hope you enjoyed your 4 minutes of water or fresh air or just staring at the computer. I want to give a very, very warm welcome to President Pollack and Vice President Molina, and I am very excited to have them both here today with us. I want to give you both the floor if you'd like to talk, or if you want to just go straight into questions, let me know.
Yeah, it's been a while, so I would like to use no more than 4 or 5 minutes just to give a few quick updates, make sure everyone knows what's going on, and then I have gotten your questions as well. I would be remiss if I didn't start by just thanking everyone. I don't think I need to remind anyone. It's been a full year we've been dealing with the pandemic. When we closed the campus a year ago, I certainly hoped it wouldn't be too long before things got back to normal. And here we are a year later and we're still on Zoom, but we're still together. And really, we're part of a campus that, hard though things may have been, we're in our second semester of in-person instruction. We're part of a community that is continuing to move forward with our mission of teaching and research and engagement. And I'm just so thankful to everyone. I want to start and take 30 seconds, as I always do, by acknowledging some of our ongoing academic excellence. I think it always helps remind us why we're all here. So just two quick recent awards. In my own field, the Association for the Advancement of Artificial Intelligence awarded its biennial Feigenbaum Prize to Carla Gomisch, who is the Ronald and Antonia Nielsen Professor of Computing and Information Science, Director of the Institute for Computational Sustainability. And Professor Gomisch is being honored for her high impact work in AI, which includes really founding the field of computational sustainability, one that combines fields from across the university: ecology, species conservation, environmental sustainability, materials discovery, clean energy. It's really a wonderful model of One Cornell. And secondly, I want to recognize Dean Mijin Yoon, the Gail and Ira Drucker Dean of the College of Architecture, Art and Planning, and Professor Roberto Sierra in the Department of Music. They were both elected to the American Academy of Arts and Letters for Lifetime Achievement. This is a big deal. They join a long line of Cornell luminaries. Our founder and first president, Andrew Dixon White, the authors Pearl Buck and Toni Morrison and E.B. White. I also want to make sure that you're updated on several significant university items. All of these have been previously announced, but let me take just a few moments in case you miss any of them because they're important. First, I am delighted that we have announced our new vice president and general counsel, Donna Katanimus Varner. She is currently vice president, general counsel, and secretary at Oberlin College. She will replace Madeline Wessel, who, as you know, is retiring at the end of this academic year. Donna has many years of leadership in higher ed. She has expertise in immigration and litigation and international engagement and more. And I think she's going to be a tremendous asset to the university. We'll have more opportunities to do this, but I also do want to take a moment to thank Madeline for her many contributions over the past 4 years. I'm also pleased that we announced Andrew Caroli, who's been the acting dean of the SC Johnson College of Business. Since the departure of Dean Kevin Halleck last month, we announced that he's been chosen to succeed Dean Halleck, and he will complete Dean Halleck's term, which runs through June of 2024. We're moving forward with our other dean searches for the first dean of the new School of Public Policy, for the new dean of the law school as well. And both of these have attracted really outstanding pools of candidates. So we do expect to have the new deans in place for both positions by early summer, by summer or early fall. And on that note, looking ahead to the fall of 2021, right now, given all of the available data, we are planning for a fall semester that will look much more like our pre-pandemic normal. As we have all along, we will continue to follow the science. But as of now, our modeling suggests that most likely most of our classes will be in person on a significantly redensified. We talked about de-densifying. Now we're going to redensify the campus. Some of the classes, particularly very large lectures where the online format has actually been quite successful, will continue to be taught online. But most of the classes will not have an online option. And as Provost Kolakoff and I announced earlier this month, we do expect a full return to online residential life and instruction. All of this is heavily dependent on having a campus where everyone is overwhelmingly consists of vaccinated individuals. As we've announced, we're making vaccination mandatory for students, with an exception, of course, for medical and religious exemptions. But the expectation is that the majority of our community will be vaccinated. We're posting vaccination rates now on the campus dashboard. And as of Monday, the community stood at 35% fully vaccinated. So that means they've had either the one or the two shots. They may not yet be past the 14-day waiting period. Just two more quick things. One, regarding commencement, I was very happy to share the good news that we'll be able to hold in-person ceremonies limited to students next month. We are bound by New York State regulations around maximal permissible gathering sizes. And that means we won't be able to have one large event. And unfortunately, we won't be able to have guests. And I'm very sad about that. But there's simply no way to follow the guidelines and invite guests. Our current plan, second degree guilty. Oh, thank God. our second degree. All right, I have to take a deep breath because I think we've all been very stressed about this. Our current plan is to hold three separate commencement ceremonies in Shulkoff on Saturday, plus a separate ceremony for new PhDs on Friday evening. And then finally, just to wrap up, because I do want to leave time for your questions, but I'm going to be seeking your advice, not necessarily today, but downstream on this. You know, this pandemic has pushed us to find new ways to do just about everything. And we are looking at everything we've done to find out which of those changes, although they may have been implemented in response to something, they may have been something we had to do, which of them turned out to work and are things we should continue to do. So for example, in the teaching arena, a number of our faculty ended up using low stakes quizzes instead of one or two or three very high stake exams. They did that to remove the temptation for cheating, which is hard to control online, but they often found that that enhances learning. Students stay up with the material better. We've learned that the use of various online tools like virtual discussion sections may actually encourage greater engagement. We found that a lot of the work we used to travel for symposia or collaborations or research, a lot of that can be done virtually, not all of it. I can't wait to get back on the road for some things, but boy, I'm personally going to be looking really careful and eliminating travel that isn't essential, because it not only saves time and cost, it also reduces our carbon footprint. I don't actually see Bob Howarth in person, but I see his smiling picture there. That obviously is a major consideration for us. We've had a large number of town halls this year to communicate with the community. Again, I want to go back to in-person, but it's really been great to bring together 1,300 or 1,500 or 2,000 people to share messages and communicate. So we'll probably also continue to have some of those. This is just the tip of the iceberg. I actually have a really long list of, you know, things we've been doing differently that we may well want to continue. But I would love in the coming weeks and months, if you all have ideas, please let me know about that too. And with that, I kept it within 5 minutes, and I will turn it back over to Logan. Although I see that Bob has his hand up. Do you want me to call on Bob, Logan?
Yeah, that's fine.
Professor Howarth, how are you?
I'm fine, President Pollack. Thank you very much. And I'm sorry we're all so distracted by the trial, but that's really good news, right? Huge relief. I just wanted to say a few things. I agree totally with what you just say about what we've learned that we can do better from teaching over the last year. If I teach a large class, we have sections with TAs in smaller groups. And some students have thrived to that in the past, others have not. And we found actually that the remote teaching turns it on the heads. The students who traditionally would do poorly did well, and vice versa. So we're looking at a hybrid model moving forward in that. The most shy students actually came out and did better online in that aspect. And we need to figure out how to build on that. So there's much to learn from. We're all still struggling just to get through the semester and the year. So it's gonna take some effort. But I also wanted to personally thank you and the leadership, well, for everything over the last year, but for your decision to require vaccination. I know that not all universities are doing that, but I think it's a great step. So thank you for doing
thank
that.
Thank you. And I appreciate both those comments. And if I could just respond to the first one, you know, I've always talked about wanting to do evidence-based education. I love the fact that we call them DBERS, discipline-based educational researchers in our units. And no one's been able to really do that. They have, but I mean, faculty themselves, it's been so hard this year in general. I really hope we can do systematic analysis of the kinds of things that you're talking about so that we know how to really intentionally and with good solid evidence craft classes so that all of our students thrive. So thank you for those comments. I appreciate it.
Great. So moving forward, yeah, I first want to just thank the administration in general for how we have handled the COVID-19 pandemic. And we have gotten so many emails, and I know that that's overwhelming for some, but you have kept us well informed. And I think that students have, and faculty and staff have been well aware of what the administration has been doing and thinking and all initiatives that have been planned. So thank you,
Logan.
The many emails. I read them all.
Oh, good. Thank you.
And for making commencement possible in person. I know that that means a lot to people. And also for changing the ad drop deadline. That does not go unnoticed in any way.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
So as I said in the chat, I'm going to go through the questions that I submitted to both of you. Not everyone has seen them. So a couple of them I'm going to read, and then I'm going to pass the floor to other people, and then we'll open the floor if that's all right.
Sure.
Okay, so I'll start with the first question. It was discussed by the University Assembly's Executive Board. So in your April 2nd email, we learned that Cornell will begin to move forward with on-site classes and activities this fall. In order to facilitate this, CU is intending to require vaccination for students requiring to campus. In that same email, you also mentioned that there will be further details regarding full campus reactivation plans. Are you able at this time to provide further information on how you plan to not only enforce vaccination participation and proofs, but also on what options CU will be able to provide to students, staff, or faculty that do not fall under clear religious and or medical exemptions? Some of us at the UA have heard from constituent members that do not currently plan to be vaccinated. And knowing this, how can the UA assist in providing our campus community with as much information as possible to facilitate vaccination compliance and participation in order to move forward with on-site campus activities? A long one, I know.
No, that's right. No, but I want to thank you for that question. And again, I want to thank you. I think one of the things that's been really nice this year is that there really has been an attempt to work together. I mean, we're not always going to agree, but the various governance units have really tried to work with administration, and we've tried to work with you. And I appreciate the sentiment between that of how can we help. So first of all, let me remind everybody that the mandate is not in place till this fall. We wanted to announce it early so that students would have time to make their plans. The exemption process, so we announced it early, but we announced it so that they'd have time for plans even before we really had time to work out all of the processes. So we do know that the student exemption process is going to be handled by Cornell Health, but we are working out the process of that now. I don't have a lot of details for you. I'm going to turn this off because my phone is going to start dinging with people telling me that about the verdict. We will be announcing that process soon. I just don't have a lot of details yet. There is a lot of information on the website, on our website, about the vaccines and about, you know, the science behind them in particular. In fact, there's a video called "The Science Behind COVID-19 Vaccines: A Conversation with Cornell's Immunology Experts." It's available through CornellCast. I'm going to ask Joel to help me remember to get that link to you, Logan. And one of the things I think would be really great, if you want to sort of help distribute it, it's just very frank information about the vaccine, about the risks, the lack thereof, and so on. And we will, you know, I'm not trying to skirt the question. I just don't have a lot more information yet on the processes that's being worked out.
No, that's okay. Thank you so much for answering. I think a lot of people are just concerned about what happens if they don't want to take the vaccination, knowing that online classes are not a possibility. Yeah, yeah. So we look forward to figuring that out. And we I fully understand that that is a large process for
And look, the expectation, we need most people to get vaccinated. We all want to get back to work. And we need to do it for the protection of our faculty who are going to, and graduate students. You know, a lot of the risk now is not for people my age anymore. It's for people between, like, I wish I could say I was 25 to 50. That's where we're starting to see more cases. So, you know, we need to protect those people. I am vaccinated. I got my second shot. As of last Saturday, I am 14 days beyond my second shot.
All right. How are you feeling?
Just fine. No, seriously, just fine. I went and got my hair cut for the first time in 15 months on Sunday.
Fantastic. So I'm going to move on to the second question. And this one was submitted by Jessica Withers. Mm-hmm. So how are the administrative functional reviews going? And are we, the Cornell community as a whole, going to get an update on those? We know that you announced a statement on April 22nd.
Yeah.
It looks like 2020 about that. So just wondering the status.
Yeah. There will be an update almost certainly within the month. We're getting ready to provide a full update. The projects are being done sort of one function at a time. So they're in, you know, communications and HR and finance, and they're at different stages. Let me remind people that the goal is to both improve our functional processes to make things run more smoothly. Sometimes things don't run as smoothly as you might, and save money. Before the pandemic, we were really on an unsustainable staffing growth pattern. The growth was just almost exponential. And hopefully these processes, this analysis is going to change our processes so that we don't have to do that anymore. But I don't want people to stress about that. We believe that there should be significant open positions that we can handle the changes without enormous impact to existing staff. I can't honestly say there will be absolutely no impact, but we're such a big university and we have so many staff positions and so much people moving around in attrition that we do not expect significant impact to existing staff. What we expect is we'll be more efficient going forward, so we'll have more resources for the things we all want to do.
Thank you. Jessica, is there any follow-up by any chance? I just want to give you the floor.
Okay. Thank you.
Awesome.
Thanks, President Pollack.
You're welcome. Thanks for the question.
Now I'm going to pass the floor to GPSA President David Dunham for 3 questions. So David, you essentially have chairship now.
Hi, David.
Hi. So thank you so much for coming today and for answering our questions. So my first question is just, how confident are you that the in-person plans for the next semester will be carried through in light of the currently lack of normalization of visa processing? And is there a point at which you will make a decision about how to handle that in case visas are not being issued in the way that they should be for international students?
Yeah. So we are pretty confident for the domestic population, you know, absent unexpected changes in prevalence rates or vaccination rates, and that could happen, we're monitoring it, but we're pretty confident that we will be in a good position. We're watching the science there. Our information on visas is that the situation is improving. It's still slow, but we are seeing improvements. We are monitoring it. We will be making adjustments for international students if that becomes necessary. I had written down, I have some notes and I had written down some statistics. Yeah, so the good news is that currently about 40% of US embassies are expected to provide a visa in time for the fall semester. The bad news is that it's 40% of the embassies. But what we're watching is which embassies there are, and there are some very positive trends. For example, the New Delhi embassy has just reopened and they are processing applications with a 26-day turnaround. That's a very welcome development. We have a lot of students from India, but we are watching it closely.
Okay, so my next question is whether you can share any of your opinions on the current direction of the anti-racism initiative, especially given we've reached a benchmark with a new working group report out of the Faculty Senate. And I ask this especially in light of whether you see it's the right direction to include such a literacy requirement in, given the debate that's happened to a certain extent within our community, but also in the public about potential conflicts between academic freedom and the purpose and objective of our anti-racism initiatives.
Yeah, thank you for that question. So in case people here don't know, the Faculty Senate is currently discussing and debating the proposals, as is appropriate. They promised to get the provost and me reports by sometime in May. They don't yet have a full set of recommendations. When they do, the provost and I will carefully review them, and then they go to the deans for discussion within each college and school. So I think it's really important, first of all, to note that the Faculty Senate recommendations are not the end of the story. In fact, you can listen to Charlie Van Loon. Is Charlie on this call? Sometimes he's here. The Dean of Faculty say, it's the first step. It's not appropriate for me at this point to sort of weigh in on specifics because this is the purview of the faculty and they deserve the right to have this debate without, well, this is what the president said. What I will say are just 2 things. First of all, obviously, I strongly support, or I wouldn't have written them in the first place, the idea that it's important for students to understand the historical bases of systemic and institutional racism. I think that's important for students to be effective in the world into which they're going. But of course, we have to always provide education and not indoctrination. Our goal always has to be to ensure that students have the knowledge and the tools that they need to understand the societies that they live in. That means it's our job as a university to teach them to observe and to reason and to question the world around them. It's our job to teach them about historical factors. It's our job to teach them how to analyze, for example, interventions, so that they can then decide on their own what to think. So I want to be respectful of the Faculty Senate. I'm looking forward to seeing their proposal, and then we will carry it forward from there. I do think it's a I don't think it's an open and shut sort of case, and I think it's appropriate that there's a lot of really rich debate going on.
Okay, so my third question relates to wellness days. And so several graduate students have spoken to me saying that they feel that they were excluded to a certain extent in the previous wellness days because either their departments scheduled events or in other kinds of labor during that time, or because their teaching assistants, because of filling other kinds of work for the university, they would have had to take vacation time under policy 1.3 for any non-essential TA work, right? And so my question is just, can the university help ensure that, since we have a few wellness days left, whether we can better ensure that graduate staff can better enjoy the benefits of wellness days, especially since they're so critical this semester?
Yeah. So look, for everyone, graduate, undergraduate, everyone, students, not faculty or staff, wellness days were meant to be a break for instruction, including graduate and professional students. So if the graduate students want to have downtime beyond break from their own instruction during wellness days, they could take vacation days, but they could also work with their supervisors to see if tasks can be shifted around. So a TA won't have instructional duties on the wellness days and can likely shift grading around so there's no non-classroom duties on those days. They might still put in, you know, what is it, 15 hours of effort, but they'd be able to keep time free from scheduled duties to relax and recharge. Students who are on GRA appointments don't have set weekly hours. Their duties are sort of directly in furtherance of their own dissertations. Again, they often have flexibility. Sometimes they study late, sometimes they come in on weekends. Many of these students could coordinate with their supervisors to be away on the wellness days and still fulfill their weekly obligations. I do recognize that students who are in more structured labs might not have that flexibility. But in general, the idea of wellness days was a break from instruction. And that's also true for undergraduates who have other sorts of duties.
So those are all my questions for now. Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. If I looked to the side of it as I was reading Logan's comment, I wasn't ignoring you, but I saw guilty on all three counts and bail revoked and Amanda to custody. Okay, we can all take a deep breath.
So thank you, David, for asking all those questions, but the last one rings really close to home because, as I put in the chat, the law school held classes on our last wellness days because we have ABA requirements for hours. And I think that we could have potentially done asynchronous learning and had professors record and given us the day off, but professors didn't cold call, so I feel like that, I guess, is a bonus. We missed out on the Socratic method for some days. But I really appreciate that for the future in case we have wellness days, because maybe the law school could, and other programs that did similar things, could try to figure something out that could help us cancel classes. But we do have classes canceled for the upcoming wellness days. Good. So if you want to add that in.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, so I definitely don't want to talk badly on the law school because I understand. Nick, is your question related? Because if not, okay, then Nick, go ahead.
Yeah, just a super quick question about the wellness days. So last time, I think a lot of grad students didn't even know about the wellness days and that we have them. So I was wondering, is there any way that we could send an email to graduate students letting them know that the wellness days exist?
Yeah, Joel, I'm sorry if for some reason the graduate students didn't know, I apologize, and Joel will help me make sure that happens in the future.
Thank you.
Thank you for raising that.
Yeah, thanks, Nick. That's super important because I have also heard of students when I mentioned wellness day.
I'm sure you didn't get, so wait, where are my undergraduates on this call? Who are the undergraduates?
Today we have Jacob, Lucas,
okay, because I was simply going to say, often when we send messages to undergraduates, they don't know either, but that's because they tell me undergraduates don't read emails. So we have to figure out different ways to get to them. But we will work on that. I'm mostly joking around. I do appreciate the comment.
Yeah, so moving on to the next question. This one's mine, and I might be wrong, but I think, Martha, that I've asked you the same kind of question all 3 years on the UA about mental health. So yeah. I think I've been rather consistent here. So especially with the pandemic, there's been an increase in mental health issues, both on campus and off campus. And as much as we try to add CAPS counselors, which I know we've done an excellent job in adding additional counselors over the past, I think, 1 to 2 years, we still have students who are feeling like very isolated, depressed, unsure, kind of their place currently in the campus community because it's so different. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to know if there are initiatives in place that people might not know about that the administration is currently working on.
Yeah. And look, this has been an emotionally challenging time for everyone, right? Not just the pandemic, the racial violence around the nation, the recent death of our students. I mean, unfortunately, when you have a student body as large as ours, you're going to have those kind of tragedies, but it's still a major tragedy. So let me mention a few specific things and then let me give you a general answer. So we have been trying to put in place some specific responses. You mentioned changing the deadline to drop a course so students don't have to feel so stressed about that. We've tried to provide both better communication and support for students who are taking and returning from health leaves. We've launched counseling support this semester for students who are studying remotely. So there's specific things like that. But I think the bigger, more holistic response comes in the form of the mental health review that we did. And what Ryan Lombardi always stresses about that mental health review is it's not just about providing more counselors. It's really about thinking about wellness broadly. It's thinking about mental health and resources and support that need to be sort of embedded throughout the environment and the culture. And so all of those recommendations, I would call them mental wellness as well as mental health recommendations. All of those are now being, not all of them are being implemented, but all of them are being very carefully analyzed. Dean Bohr is leading the implementation committee. And you can follow the implementation. If you go to mentalhealthreview.cornell.edu, you can track exactly what's being proposed and done. There really is... We're never going to get ahead of it if we keep hiring CAPS counselors. That can't be the whole answer. We really need to think about wellness more broadly. And that's what that broad list of suggestions gets at. So thank you you have asked me. In fact, when I got that question, I thought, this one's from Logan. I'm kidding.
I wouldn't be surprised. I think it's 3 years in a row where I talked.
We're not perfect yet, but we really have tried very hard. You know, I tell people all the time, there's no part of my budget that's growing faster than the resources we're putting into mental health.
And that's really appreciated. And yeah, I wrote in the chat, I'm sorry, everyone, my question was supposed to include the entire campus community. And I think I just said students. So that was a misspoke on my half, just because I'm reading quickly. But I know, President Pollack, I'll email you at another point. I have like a couple of ideas of things that have worked in the law school that could work across campus, including like, just like, I forget what they're called now. The like circles.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I know what you mean.
The healing circle.
Thank you, Pilar. Yeah. I saw you like mouthing it because I said it the other day, but like healing circles and just other opportunities for people to connect. And
good.
So it's really appreciated that administration is always taking mental health seriously at Cornell. I'm going to ask it but it might not be as relevant because we're offering COVID-19 vaccinations on campus and also in the nearby area, but for students who have appointments that are outside of the Ithaca area and are having a hard time like getting a bus or don't have the financial means to travel, are there any options assistance?
Yeah. So we have, until recently, students have sometimes, some of them can get it in Ithaca, but some students have had to go to Portland or Syracuse or where have you. And the Access Fund, we have Access Fund resources. We've been using them and they do remain available for students for whom travel presents a hardship. But as you know, we were set to have an on-campus vaccine clinic. We had to cancel it when the J&J vaccine use was put on pause. But I'm really delighted that we've got 700 doses of Moderna. Students can enroll. It's going to be on Friday in Bartels Hall. And then if you get it, you'll be automatically signed up for your second shot on May 25th. And we are looking to try and get more doses as well. Now it's going to be a little bit tricky because you have to still be on campus 4 weeks later or, you know, particularly with Moderna, but we're working to get as much vaccine as we can to run more clinics.
Thank you so much. And I know that you both have allocated only 30 minutes, so I want to give the opportunity that for you to decide whether you want to open the floor to additional questions or if you have to head out somewhere else.
I can take maybe two. I can't stay super long, but I am willing, if there's one or two pressing things, I'm certainly willing to do that.
Okay. Is there anyone now that the floor is open? I see Brandon. The floor is yours.
Hi, Brandon.
Hi, President Pollack.
I cannot wait until I can get back to eat Cornell food. I just want to say that.
Thank you so much. We look forward to having you back in our dining halls, eating in person and mingling with students again. The question I have is kind of on that lines as we look to achieve that herd immunity. Mm-hmm. The move you've done with students is extremely appreciated. And there is still the sentiment for many folks not willing to or wanting to or able to medically take the vaccine. What is the current thought or idea behind at which point you would make a decision for staff and faculty requirements to be able to reach that herd immunity? Because I worry that as we wait and hope, and I appreciate all the really forward messaging, we encourage, we wish, and we hope, and we want you all to do that. At some point, there may be a decision that has to be made that it's a required. And have you thought about a timeline for that?
Yes and no. I mean, what I'm very pleased with is we're seeing the numbers of vaccinations in the faculty and staff and the student community continue to rise. So for the moment, that's what we're watching. We're talking about whether there might be a requirement for faculty and staff, but we're not there yet. And it's just really hard to say when we might be there. Right now, we're just watching the numbers to see what will happen. But again, I personally want to say, go get vaccinated. It's easy. And you can go out and get haircuts and things like that that you couldn't do before.
I'm right with you. I just got my haircut for the first time in 15 months as well. So I was very happy to do that. And I think there may be some opportunity. I appreciate that you're giving more leeway for those who are vaccinated. I think that helps to encourage, and those sort of lifting of restrictions will help to continue
So I, as of what is today's the 20th, right? As of today, I no longer have to go in and do my my testing because I'm vaccinated. So that's a plus for sure.
All right, and I am going to call on Pilar.
Hi, Pilar.
Hi, President Pollack. On the same note as following up Brandon, will we see Cornell stand as an institution on its policy towards staff and faculty regarding the vaccine? Meaning, as we're so siloed. Will it be left up to possibly colleges and or deans if they feel their college wants to go differently, or will we to one?
I doubt it. I can't say with absolute certainty, but this strikes me as a decision that would need to be made by HR at the university level. I have to be real careful here. First of all, I'm not absolutely guaranteeing that. I'm just trying to be honest in what I think. And secondly, while Cornell Medicine obviously may be in a different position than the Ithaca campus, right? They're just in a different environment, a different set of conditions. But I doubt that we would leave that to schools and colleges.
Perfect, thank you.
All right.
Okay.
Everyone join me in a warm.
Thank you all so much. Really nice to see you all. And hopefully by next time, it'll be in person again.
Thank you both.
Be well.
For coming. Okay, everyone. I think that was really well and well done and informative. Thank you, everyone, for the questions, both the questions ahead of time and Brandon and Pilar for your questions as well. Oh, and Nick, you actually added in a question and so did Bob. I'm going back in my memory. So I'm going to keep going. Executive committee update. Uche's not here, so I play this game with Pilar now. I am going to volunteer unless you want to.
But actually this one, again, it took us a while, right? But going, looking around and I said, okay, Uchi's not here. So I pulled up the agenda already just to surprise you and everyone else for that matter. So again, everyone, thank you for, bearing with Logan and I in our executive update. We did have our meeting on April 13th. We were actually all present. including Ute. We had just specific discussions on a letter of support discussing wellness days, as you saw, Logan also mentioned it here, where we discussed that. We also had charter and bylaws changes, resolutions as we were moving forward, specifically also even what Brandon had done for the UHRB. We did then discuss any other possible resolutions that might be remaining towards the last few meetings that we have on the timeline left for us. We also did, you know, confirm and wrap up those meetings as well as to when we would possibly have the organizational meeting and any other leftover business that could be discussed on that meeting as well, which we did obviously confirm and we have done so in the past, or I should say the UA has done so in the past, that some business was wrapped up towards the path of the organizational meeting. And then that was pretty much it. We really didn't have anything else to discuss. Logan, if there's anything else to add, Tom?
Yeah, I'm just going to add, everyone, your last opportunity to submit a bylaw or charter resolution is our next meeting. And yeah. I plan to submit two of them, so stay tuned. But I want to give everyone that update. Regular resolutions can also come forward at the organizational meeting, but we try not to have it at the very, very last meeting. So I would highly recommend that if you want to bring forward a resolution, that it be at the next meeting. And yeah, I believe that that was everything. Thanks, Pilar. That was like a nice, pleasant surprise tonight.
Hey, you know, keep you on your toes.
Better than I've done. So yeah, you're keeping me on my toes for sure. Jacob, I saw your hand go up and then go down.
All good. You answer my question.
Okay. Fantastic. All right. So moving on, I'm sorry that it says Campus Infrastructure Committee on the agenda. It was a very quickly written agenda, and I completely understand that that is no longer the name. But Jacob, the floor is yours for a committee update.
Absolutely. All fine. We have a meeting tomorrow. We canceled last meeting due to a bunch of different reasons. And by the time we actually had the meeting, we didn't have quorum. So I didn't want to waste everyone's time. So I said it would be better if we just relied on email votes. I've been back and forth with a few different members of the committee regarding some resolutions that are currently in the works. And at our meeting tomorrow, we will be discussing quite a few different resolutions. Look forward to seeing you all there.
Thank you, Jacob. And Bennett is not here. I'm going to ask if there's anyone who would be comfortable giving a brief update on the Campus Welfare Committee. All right, seeing none, I do know that there is a meeting scheduled for this Friday. Let me quickly look at my phone to tell you all what time. There is a meeting scheduled for 4:30 p.m. on this Friday. I'm really sorry about Kale. And I intend to be there, and I'm part of the Ad Hoc Veterans Committee. I have to be changed from a voting member to an ex officio. And yeah, we plan on bringing forward a couple of veteran resolutions. And I know that the CWC is working on other things as well. And I wish that I could give you a better update on behalf of Bennett, but I unfortunately can't. Jacob, is there anything that you could add potentially to that about other resolutions in the making?
Right. So tomorrow we actually have a meeting for the renaming and historical preservation committee. Hey is also on the committee as a member, as is a undergraduate student, Joseph Mullen. We're looking to finally reach out to some organizations tomorrow to get the ball rolling and perhaps come up with a resolution to prolong the existence of the committee, looking at ways we can do that within the current charter.
All right, fantastic. Thank you for supplementing my, I guess I did have to give a sporadic update. So Pilar, I'm not off the hook. And last but not least, on committee updates, Brandon, the floor is yours with the CJC.
Thank you. As you saw, we have some work to do with the UHRB. We will now begin to send out the communications for applications. Thank you, everyone there on the resolution. We do have upcoming, Ryan Lombardi will be visiting the CJC on April 30th. to speak to folks about his plans for the new student code of conduct that will go into effect. In addition, Kevin Williams, who has been acting as an advisory role here on campus, working with the Dean of Students Office, will be visiting us on May 12th, at which time we will be having a brief presentation from the JA's office in conjunction with the JCC on some of the compare and contrast of the current code of conduct and the new student code of conduct as they see them in their from their perspectives. So those are two big meetings. I'm very excited to have those kind of closing out this semester here. A lot of work that we've done over the past year with the changes. So invite everyone to attend those. They're on the assembly's calendar and welcome everyone to join us for those upcoming meetings.
Thank you very much, Brandon. And now I'm going to open the floor for any questions for committees. Very silent during these times, everyone. All right, moving on to constituent group updates. Lucas, am I putting you on the spot again?
No, should be able to give a quick rundown on student assembly.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, so what we discussed at our last meeting, there was a couple big resolutions. The first being titled Disengaging Cornell from the War in Yemen, and it demands the university end its relationship with Saudi Arabia and any arms manufacturers that have been involved in the war crimes being perpetrated in Saudi Arabia. So that passed. Then another resolution recommending that Cornell add mental health checks to the daily check that all students are required to complete. So that was an exciting one to see, and I think a really great opportunity on the table potentially if the daily check stays around, especially next semester. And then the last resolution we considered was one, an academic policy kind of decision recommending the university have all classes have a 10 slip day policy. Slip days are something that has been popular in some other departments across the university, but just kind of asking that that be expanded to all departments and all classes.
Thank you very much, Lucas. I really appreciate the essay updates over the past couple of weeks. It's your efforts do not go unnoticed and highly appreciative. So next I'm going to move on to David with the GPSA.
Yeah, so in our last meeting, we heard three different presentations. The first we heard from Zebediah Hall of the Student Disability Services, had a chance to answer students' questions. Second, we heard from the Center for Teaching Innovation. And third, we heard from Drea Darby from Diversity Preview Weekend. In addition to those presentations, we considered two resolutions. The first resolution would have, it opens up the election period for voting members. Usually we elect new voting members of the GPSA in the second to last meeting of the semester. We decided since it's not possible for people to really caucus and campaign the way the charter requires us to, that we decided to have a open election where anyone across the entire graduate and professional community can nominate themselves or another person to become a voting member. And that period is still open until the end of this week. So we're hoping to get more candidates for voting members. And then those voting members will start their year-long term in our May 3rd meeting, which is the last meeting of the semester. Right. The second resolution renews Appendix B of the GPSA Charter, which establishes guidelines for byline-funded organizations. Basically, all this does is it renews those criteria with the addition that PhD students at Cornell Tech will are added to the so-called pass-through provision, which applied to Cornell Tech master's students over the past 2 years. So basically, they pay their student activity fee, but it is returned minus certain deductions to the GPSA via a designated Cornell Tech organization. That applied for Cornell master's students, and now it is being done for PhD students as well. So because as I explained in the last meeting, this has been a longstanding issue where Cornell Tech graduate students pay into the student activity fee, but very few of the services of byline funded organizations actually impact students at Cornell Tech. And so they're looking for some kind of solution. The long-term solution is that the Cornell Tech PhD student group will be, successfully apply for and obtain byline funding in the next cycle. But until then, we have this pass-through arrangement that allows for almost the entirety of their student activity fee to be returned to a designated Cornell Tech student organization. So that's been sort of finalized, and we're waiting to see if that plan can actually be implemented. Last thing I should mention is that our last GPSA meeting of the year will be on May 3rd, and we'll be electing new officers, including a new president, and as well as new chairpersons for different committees and new UA reps. So the new UA reps, apart from myself, will begin their term next year. So I think the other UA reps should still be okay to fulfill their term. But if we elect a new president and my term ends, then presumably that person will fill my ex officio spot. If we don't manage to elect a new president in our last meeting of the semester, I will be in contact with you about whether I should still be on the UA for the final meeting of the semester. I'm not really sure what the rules say about that, but that is still the possibility. We don't know what candidates are going to step forward because it's an internal election. And I think I'll stop there. Yeah.
Nick, would it be okay for me to save your question until the end?
Yeah, totally.
Okay, thank you. So I'm going to call on Hey with the EA.
Thanks, Logan. So the Employee Assembly is meeting tomorrow. We're going to have a presentation from Kate Supron from Community Relations. She's going to talk about how Cornell connects with the community and what Cornell's role is in the local economy. We've continued our work with Asian and Asian American groups across IFCA and on campus to talk about different initiatives. So tomorrow we're meeting with HR to discuss an Asian Pacific Islander podcast series for the Inclusive Excellence series that they're doing. And I've been working with Amy Sumchuk Chonglong on a campaign for anti-Asian violence. And we've also got elections that are coming up, and we've got some vacancies still. So I think there will be a special election that we'll probably head into as we go into the fall. And we've got, I think, some focus on awards. I think based on priorities poll data, a lot of staff are feeling very exhausted, drained, and the morale has just been pretty low. So it's been a really good time to revamp some of the awards that we really haven't highlighted in the past, like the George Peterman Service Award. So we've got 23 nominations. We're hoping to award that to a group or unit on campus sometime in May. And we also have an award currently named the Mary Opperman Award that we're going to revamp with new guidelines and timelines that we're hoping to sort of launch as time allows. So it'll be interesting as we head into a new year, you know, looking at, you know, who's going to be involved and what those committees are going to look like. I hope that there'll be continuity as we move into a new year. So that is pretty much my update.
Thanks, Hey. And it's really lovely to hear that you guys are taking mental health so seriously and bringing awards back in to hopefully boost some morale. I think that that's really lovely. Another last but not least, Charlie, I'm passing you the floor with the Faculty Senate.
Yeah, thanks, Logan. Okay, so we had sort of an extra meeting last week. It had two halves. The first half was the second half was a meet the candidates thing for the dean of faculty position. So we have two candidates, Risa Leibovich from ILR and Eve DeRosa from Human Ecology. So there was a 45-minute Q&A with each of them. The first half of the meeting, we presented the final reports of two of the three working groups that we have on the anti-racism initiatives. Those are the Student Education Working Group and the Faculty Education Working Group. So earlier, just as a backup, like a few weeks ago, we did the idea for the center. So the center seems to be in very good shape. We aim to have closing arguments on that tomorrow. And then we're doing all these by electronic vote. And that vote would probably take place starting like Thursday for a week. And that's barring any kind of surprise thing tomorrow. In terms of the student and the faculty piece, by far the biggest, I don't want to use the word uproar, but resistance is to the faculty piece. I'm not saying that the number of postings on our website is an illuminating indicator, but it's about 10 to 1, more 10 times more comments on the faculty piece than the student piece, and they're almost all extremely negative in terms of the main reasons are sort of academic freedom, you can't tell me what to do, this is indoctrination, and so on. The student piece has logistical problems. You know, you have the charges to uplift the education of all of our students in this particular area, and there's certainly challenges there, and there are things to work out, but that seems to be in better shape. But the faculty piece is extremely negative. And again, you can't judge by the postings, but a couple of things that we'll be talking about tomorrow in no particular order, and I'm speaking of these things from a neutral position, which I sort of have to take. So again, in no particular order, what's it look like if, you know, students have a required thing? I know it's just in the, you know, in orientation, but there's sort of an expectation and a requirement there. And all the staff go through a six-part training program. I mean, for faculty to say that we're above this, it sends a certain kind of message. Now, you can sort of say, oh, we're the defenders of academic freedom. We have bigger fish to fry. That's one defense. Another one would be that we don't need it, all right? Or the other can be that these programs, our experience with them is kind of negative. So in that space, in terms of existing programs, there are some really standout workshops that are run by the Office of Faculty Development and Diversity. For example, Through the Lens is something that alerts you to things that can go on during the search, for a search committee. Then you have Stand Up, I forget the exact name, but there are a couple of really good ones out there. But some of them are not so good. In fact, they feel that we're headed for more of the same, and it's not worth it. So that's kind of the stage set there, and I'm not sure what's going to happen. Anyway, we'll have a full discussion of those things tomorrow, with closing discussion 2 weeks from tomorrow, and then a vote on both the student and faculty educational pieces to follow. So it's, I would say it's the most tense I've ever seen in 5 years of doing this job. And people are very, feel extremely strongly about this. And so we'll see what happens. Okay, yeah.
Thanks, Charlie. That's a lot going on for you all, and exciting, and pressure's on, I guess. So I'm now opening the floor for questions, and Nick, you will be recognized first.
Thanks, Logan. I just wanted to say, since this might be David's last meeting at the UA, if we do elect a new president, I just wanted to thank him for representing us at the UA and thank him for really working super hard this year. We had a really difficult year as a GPSA, and it was very hard to adapt and to get any involvement at all. And David was working tirelessly and picking up the slack for everyone else, myself included. So I just really wanted to publicly acknowledge him and thank him for that.
Thank you so much, Nick, and thank you everyone for helping me out too.
So David, just a quick clarifying question, because our next meeting is May 5th. The new president would be elected and taking over, or would they just take over at the organizational meeting? Because that's typically what happens. You would serve out your entire academic year until May 5th, and then the new person would then take effect at the next meeting a week later.
I will consult with our charter and bylaws, but my interpretation this whole time is that it's an immediate transition. So when I was elected, literally what happened was the vote went through in our meeting and I immediately became the president and took over all the responsibilities of president.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'll double check to make sure that's the case.
If that is the case, then I will echo Nick in thanking you for everything that you've done and for being someone who I've aspired to be in many, many ways in my own leadership. And I really hope that you guys pass a resolution that keeps you at our next meeting and that you don't leave until the organizational meeting, because I think it would be really it would be a shame to lose you when we're voting on things that are pertinent to like your own knowledge as well. So I understand that I don't want to pressure the GPSA, but I'm definitely coming to your next meeting and going to try to see what's going on and just find out if that's possible. And then if there's anyone who knows of previous precedent, is that typically like I guess Pilar, I'm gonna call on you, like it's class, when you were in your position, did you start before the organizational meeting?
No, it was only at the organizational meeting.
Okay, because David, I also only started at the organizational meeting when I was elected through the GPSA. So that might be something to maybe like change around a bit, because I think it's important to have your position
stay. Okay. Close up, as it were, close up.
Yeah.
Loose ends.
Yeah, that would make more sense to me too. Yeah, so I'll double check everything, but I think that probably makes sense. But okay. Yeah. So, yeah.
I still mean everything that I said. I'm just hoping that you're at the next meeting. And then we have a couple seconds. I have two quick questions. And the first, Lucas, I'm wondering your mental health check on the daily check. If somebody said that they were not doing well, what would happen?
Yeah, so that was something that we talked about. A little bit, yeah, what an actual implementation process looks like, or action process. And I don't know that that was something that we came to a clear consensus on at our meeting, what the response would be. I guess I wish I could offer more on what would happen, but we didn't really flesh that out.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, and if you want to brainstorm, since this is something that I'm really passionate about, I'd be happy to talk and see if we could think of ideas and then potentially bring it before the UA also, because I think that's a fantastic idea to ask people how they're doing on top of just asking them to answer questions about COVID. And then my second question is for David. I'm wondering if there is a member on your executive board who is doing outreach currently to the individual schools to make sure that they know that the election period is open currently.
We're all trying to do that. But we do have someone who's designated for communications who's been trying to do that specifically. I think Nick also has some knowledge about this.
Yeah, reach out to me if you want me to do anything with the law school, and then Nick, you're recognized.
We also sent an email to all graduate and professional students letting them know about the elections, but Logan, if you can send an email to the law school, that would certainly be beneficial.
I'll send an email to the new Cornell Law CLSA president, and I'll just let him know that I'll forward the email and I'll send a note.
Wait, I'm sorry. So I can't believe it. I just realized it's only the voting members in the graduate school division who is it's not the professional schools. It's only a segment, I get them mixed together. Yeah.
Okay. We're still in our internal election. So
again, yeah, you are. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And then I know it's 6:00. I want to just quickly make sure, is there anyone who wanted to speak during open floor discussion? Because then we can move to extend the meeting briefly, but I don't want to cut anyone off. So going once, going twice, no open floor discussion, entertaining a motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any opposition? All right, 6:00 p.m. on the dot. We are adjourned, everyone. Thank you all.
This has been a production of Cornell University on the web at cornell.edu.